Teaching meditation can be a deeply rewarding experience. Help others improve their mental and emotional well-being, reduce stress, improve focus, increase self-awareness and self-regulation, all while deepening your own practice and understanding. Join acclaimed author, Buddhist teacher, and Emmy Award-winning musician David Nichtern on Tuesday, May 28th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for a free online discussion on teaching meditation in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern on May 28th.
I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Server Member Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Server Member Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/innerAcademy.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, everyone. It's Mind Rolling. I am back. And we haven't talked in a long time. And I'm just catching up with Tanisara. So great to see you again. And also, so great to have you back in America here.
Yeah, thanks, Raghu. It's really, really good to be here. And we're living in the North Bay area now.
Yeah.
It's great. We love it.
Wonderful. Yeah. And more people can hopefully catch up with you a little bit.
Things have gotten busier.
Yeah, I bet they have. I bet they have.
Yeah.
Now, one thing for sure, I have been following you. Not following you, but I have, certainly noticed many of the postings that you do on social media and so on. And the way that you are engaged socially and culturally alongside of, well, engaged Buddhism, really, is what comes to mind. And you just put something out that I found, an article, a blog called A Brutal Year Ends as Extinction Rebellion Rises.
I did indeed. I did, yeah.
I'm just gonna read a little bit so people get a flavor of this. This will be linked, by the way, on the Be Here Now Network and Mind Rolling on the show notes page, so you'll be able to read the whole article, all of you out there listening. But this year has been brutal, specifically because it heralded a drastic state shift, a tipping point, and planetary crossing over thresholds that should not be passed. We have stumbled from the hope of sustainability to a deeply painful reality of rapid environmental dismemberment. We've seen the shredding of democratic principles and processes. We've been horrified by a rise in fascism dragging its ghosts from the 1930s and 40s, and have been appalled and enraged as billionaires flaunt and force their lethal agendas regardless of the cost. But most devastating is the eco-destruction we can no longer escape or delegate to future times. In a blink of an eye, we suddenly crossed from the assumption of human civilization's unbridled bright future to the dawning realization of our probable demise. Ouch! Okay, that, and it goes on from there. Okay, and I, as I said, there'll be a link so you can read this. So, one of the things that I have been doing a lot lately on podcast is talking about the way that we are so hooked into our stories, our day-to-day story of our reality, of the mini me, me, and all the way to it being very, very difficult to have any idea of cutting through the polarization. It's very, very difficult. Now, so I read this blog of yours, and I resound with every word, every word, and those around me, of course, as well. And there's a way in which, I mean, I'd like you to address this, that we become so embedded in our story, which is supported by this horror, right? But in another way, it really supports the polarization that we are going through, both internally and socially. And can you just address that a little bit? You do in the article at some point, of course, talk about it through talking about heart. But is there a way in which we are indulging ourselves at all with supporting everything that we believe we are right?
Well, that's the question. That's one of the main questions of our time, I believe. And I think it's quite layered and quite a process to thread out for our own internal experience and how we want to respond to that, rather than being able to leap to a simple conclusion or answer, of course, because we're in this massive process and we're all feeling that, and it's energizing and activating many different parts of our being. And at the heart of that, you know, you and I are in the consciousness business, really. We're in awakening consciousness. And at the heart of that, there is an awakening of consciousness happening, and it's happening through the enormous force of what the shadow brings to us, or what the, you know, the eternal play of light and shadow that unfolds. And within that crucible, there is a tremendous pressure and an evolutionary possibility in it, but there's also a devolutionary process that can happen where we devolve into the separative consciousness. And we're seeing both happening on the world stage. We're seeing this radical devolution where we're going into sort of tribal camps, and we're going to, as the structures dissolve, you know, this natural, the fear of that, the great fear of loss of control. I mean, patriarchy, which is the oldest system, and all the other systems that fit into that, has, in some ways, it has many shadow and difficult sides, but it's sort of offered this sense of we're in control. We control nature. We keep you safe. We give you food. You know, that's the deal. But don't rock the boat. Don't be too free. Don't, you know, challenge us, because we'll do you in, basically, at some level or another. And so, you know, so on the one hand, there's this sort of enormous crumbling of those structures that have sort of kept us safe, and that they're not keeping us safe anymore. They're destroying us. You know, they've become rabid and sort of cannibalistic of humans and nature. And so there has to be some sort of challenge in that. But on the other hand, it's activating enormous fear in human beings, an enormous sort of sense of destabilization as the world that we've known is, even if we don't believe in climate change, our bodies know it and we feel it at some subliminal level. It's not even climate change, it's the sort of heating of the planet and, you know, everything that we know now that's going on as a result of that. So I think there's this enormous devolution into these sort of old forces, these old ways. Let's try and grab control. Let's do that through nationalism, through separating out. And clearly, we can't put energy in, even if that activates places in ourselves where we feel that. We can't activate those energies in ourselves. We can't align with those devolution energies, devolving energies. But on the other hand, we do need to hold some lines. You know, just as the Buddha, when he was under the Bodhi tree and also had the force of Mara, which was a part of his awakening process. The Mara was the agency that helped to stimulate awakening in the Buddha in part. You know, it was a huge, and even followed the Buddha around after he was awakened, you know. So, but the Buddha just was like, I know you. I know you and I see you. He didn't go, oh, we're all one and it's fine for you to be there. He challenged back. He said, I know you, I see you, you've done this before, but I'm not deluded by you and I'll call you out. So I think there is a way of having to call out those forces that are divisive, hateful, undermining, destructive, you know, destabilizing, working for profit for their own, power and control. So one has to call them out. How we do that and where we do that from, what kind of consciousness we bring to it is a place I struggle with. I have to confess, you know, I mean, we have to do it. We have to say no, you know, a healthy boundary. No, you will not destroy the earth. No, you will not take down, you know, the Amazon forest. You know, how we do that, where we do that from is the issue. It's not to say that we can't call out. And it does, and I think as you and I have been in this world of raising awareness, and that we have the example of named Karoli Baba Maharaji that we just talked about before we went live, who kind of says things like, "Can't you see it's all perfect?" or "Love everyone, feed everyone." It's a reminder that there's a way that we can hold consciousness. It's not even a reminder, it's the reality, it's some deep reality. This every being is resident in our awareness. You know, there's nothing outside of conscious awareness. So all of those that represent the shadow forces are part of our practice, part of our the process that we're in. And so at some level, and I can get to that place sometimes, not often, but I can feel compassion for all of it and all that are actually holding the shadow and pushing it back to us in such a dramatic and intensified way. So somewhere in between that, all of those dimensions that are operating, it is almost a daily practice, a mindfulness practice. Mindfulness practice, how do we land in this process? How do we find our truth? How do we respond? How do we meet challenge? How do we articulate, and how do we do that by keeping our heart, which I think is really, really essential, free from the energy that further divides and hates and generates that separative consciousness. But, you know, on the other hand, how do we say, yeah, no, you cannot destroy everything because you're not very conscious.
Let me just say one thing about, could you mention Neem Karoli Baba saying, where Ram Dass says this from time to time, he quotes him saying, it's all perfect, don't you know, when Ram Dass wanted to go off and, you know, take his Volkswagen bus and help people in a war-torn area in Bangladesh. I get with Ram Dass, and we always go through this thing, and I say, and he will say it as well. When you are coming from the undivided, as he is coming from the undivided, then one can say such a thing with the most gigantic profundity of what that really means. And we are little me's here, we can't say that. And Ram Dass can't say that. And he'll say, I didn't say that. He said that.
Yes.
You know, so I just want to make clear for everybody, that is not just a statement that we can just, it's all perfect. And we are living in a world where it is not perfect, as you described in your blog, very, very in
detail.
I agree.
Thank you for clarifying that, because I think that spiritual bypass happens a lot, and it gives us a comfortable out, which we shouldn't have. We should feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
We should be on the hot fire now, because that's demanded of us to be awake. But, you know, to some level, that's a very profound contemplation. And for me, to go to the level of deep equanimity to look, well, you know, as our teacher, Ajahn Chah, Thai forest master, would say, if it shouldn't be like this, it wouldn't be like this. You know, because there's so much of the mind going, it should not be, this person should not have this power. This just, and it's heartbreaking every day to see the level of wanton, you know, venal destruction. You know, I'll just sign off and pollute this and sign off and destroy this wildlife and take these children from their parents at the border. And every day it's an assault on humanity and the heart. Yeah. You know, it's like Mara gone wild.
Yeah. Right.
It's the sort of the demons are out to play.
Yeah.
But I do feel the perfection for me in it is not that it's perfect, or that we're just accepting it how it is, but the perfection is that it's a force that's basically now it's come down to and say, it's completely, the veils have been lifted from your eyes. You know, you are seeing now what's going on. What are you going to do? How are you going to be? What consciousness are we going to bring to this? How are we going to respond? And that's the challenge, I think. And that, certainly, if we hadn't have had this level of challenge, then we probably wouldn't have had the level of awakening that we've seen.
Right, and I think that that is essential truth, and the shadows that are being thrown out, they are something for us to work with, in my mind, individually. Right, I think I think you'll agree. There's two levels of two planes of consciousness that we can work on at the same time, and one is dealing with those shadows inside ourselves, and the other is dealing with the external. And like, yeah, we have to say no, and we have to support each other in being able to gather. And in the article, you talk about how all of these, you know, incredible things are happening. You know, the election of all these female candidates, women candidates in Congress, what's going on in France, the Me Too movement. All of these things are coming out of this darkness, and they are absolutely making a dent in what we're dealing with. So I noticed something else, Tani Sara, that I think it happened last year, and it was a conference, I believe, that you guys put together. It was a dialogue on spirituality, Afro-Dharma, Science and Humanity at Botswana University, right? And Mind and Life Dialogues. And this is something that His Holiness the Dalai Lama has initiated in many different places. I know he didn't come, but that he... I think he Skyped in with you or something, a video, video chat. Just tell me a little bit about what was the motivation behind putting this together, and what were you hoping for in terms of that dialogue? And
we didn't put that together. We actually took a whole gang of our guys from South Africa who run our small hermitage there, Dhammagiri, and friends, supporters, and we went together to attend it. It's a conference on Ubuntu, and partly there was a real hope to see the Dalai Lama for many of those in South Africa who had not had the opportunity. The truth was that in the end, he very graciously sort of cited, you know, aging and health to do the travel, but the fact was that the Chinese had put a blockade on his ability to get into Botswana, as they have done now for many times in South Africa. And that's the politics, where the politics are and where what's happening with China and Africa at the moment. So there was that political piece, but he gave a beautiful address at the beginning, which we saw. And then there was a lineup of presenters from very many different perspectives, from the mindful and neurological perspective, from the deep psycho spiritual perspective, from the indigenous, like one of the main speakers that we felt very responsive with was Mandaza Kindwama, who is a Sangoma, or a traditional healer, who really, he wasn't an academic, but really talked to Zimbabwean, talked to the depth of our lost relationship with nature and the need to reclaim that. And since then, we've been working with him more, and he's been teaching at our place more. And I was trying to bring him to America, but the government refused a visa for him. Mm. But the main focus of the conference is this very deep African wisdom, Ubuntu, which means we are who we are through other people. It means that everything, every being is our relative. It means that we can't be as we are now without the support of everything that's gone before. It's the sort of philosophy of interdependence. And so this runs through African culture. And so it was a real exploration of what that means politically, socially, spiritually, and on every, and personally on every level of our being.
That concept, which I am a little bit familiar with, you also have, so Ubuntu is in, and I cannot pronounce the names of something, Nguni language, right?
Yeah, correct.
And then I saw also Boto is a Soto Tswana word.
Yes.
It means this, I mean, this is so great. It's unbelievable. Humanity, humanness, kindness, compassion, sharing, humility, mutual respect and responsibility, interconnectedness, harmony, a universal bond that connects all humanity. So they manage in one word to say it all. I mean,
exactly. It's a very profound, when you say Ubuntu, also you have that sense of all of that.
Yeah.
Deep interconnection. And that's a very lived part of Africa, in the African worldview. It's very old. It goes right back, you know, to the mists of time, to Khoisan,
right?
First Nation peoples. Yeah.
So yeah, and you were in the article, the philosophy of Boto Ubuntu, comes from indigenous African religious beliefs and practices, where all of life, nature, spirit, and creator are interrelated, interconnected, and interdependent. Right? Applies intergenerationality and also interspecies. The self emerges from the relationship with others. Of course, what we did in this country, I mean, all of that is lives within the Native American culture in this country, which we mostly wiped out or attempted to wipe out and have left in shambles. I mean, it's one of the most outrageous markers in the history of this country. And unfortunately, there is very little of that that has seeped through into mainstream culture, where it could have been such a vibrant way for us to connect back with who we really are. And it's very unfortunate. And now, I think bringing these concepts into this country is extraordinarily important. And I'm sorry that this particular gentleman that you tried to bring in couldn't get in, because that's just the kind of thing that we need.
Well, not for now, but maybe at another time.
Yeah.
And he came to Canada, so he was able to get in there.
See? My country. Canada.
Oh, I didn't know. Oh, good. It's just up the road.
I'm Canadian. Yes, I still, even though I'm a dual, I'm like, okay.
Yeah, you're right. These, I think we have to revive the ancient indigenous wisdom, basically. And it is true that they were decimated. The indigenous First Nations people were decimated by white settlers everywhere, in Australia, Africa, Southern Africa, America, New Zealand, so on. And surprisingly, I mean, what in some ways, where was I when basically we're all now in that same boat that the indigenous peoples have been in for hundreds of years since the arrival of Columbus, in that what we're experiencing is what they've experienced for hundreds of years. You know, this horror. Imagine the horrors. You see your whole lifestyle just being heartlessly, wantonly, grievously decimated. You know, the enormous pain to realize that you are being wiped out, your animals are being wiped out, that there's no respect. You know, and that's some of what we're seeing now happening as we arrive in the cannibalistic stage of capitalism, is we're feeling what they felt, you know, and the threat to our existence is what they experienced. But on the other hand, there is an enormous rising of indigenous peoples actually throughout the whole world that have turned up to various climate. Like when I was at Standing Rock, it was the first time that all the tribes had come together for that, and indigenous peoples from South America, from the Maori, from New Zealand, from Africa. So there was this enormous gathering of indigenous knowledge and ceremony, and they really understood that everything, you know, this interrelationship with species and rocks and trees and mountains, it's all alive, it's all conscious. So their worldview that we have no rights, you know, to do what we've done. We've desacralized everything in ourselves in the process and left ourselves soulless and wanting and devastated and addicted and lost, you know. So they've managed to, even in the spite of the enormous decimation that they experienced, they've managed to hold this kernel of truth and wisdom and are reappearing, like we've seen, you know, some of the indigenous women voted into Congress just now and rising, and their voices are rising, their wisdom is rising, their challenges are rising. And when I was at Standing Rock, it was very clear to me, it was the first decolonized space, I think, that I've experienced, that we should be following their guidance now.
Yeah.
You know, their way of being, their way of sacralizing everything, their understanding of the deep spirituality in all matter. It's not, there's no divorce there.
Right.
So, and you know, within that, there is the acknowledgement and the waking up. As part of this waking up that's happening, it's also waking up to the layers of the history that how we got here. You know, we're having to see, and I think it's very good and very, very heart sore, but very necessary to deeply take in, as you say, what has gone before. You know, what has, not to generate guilt and shame, which are actually, in a Buddhist understanding, ultimately not very helpful states of mind. They are, if you have, you know, the sense of remorse is a healthy state that you need to feel to change your behavior, to wake up. But if it turns from that was an unskillful act to I am a bad person, and I am a guilty person, then that becomes an unwholesome state. So it's not to generate, you know, a lot of that. I have experienced a lot of that being in South Africa as a white person, you know, that daily sense of shame and guilt and all the compensations you do around that. But at the end of the day, it's a different kind of reckoning that we need to make internally and collectively around the history. And I think that reckoning is a deep, deep acknowledgement. You know, it's the acknowledgement of harm done, which has in its own way begins to have a sort of a redemptive aspect to it.
Yeah, very much. I must mention somebody from South Africa that we have had over here, and we've had over at our, he's come over to attend the retreats and so on. His name is John Lockley.
Yes.
You know, John, he's an unusual man in that he's part of the Sangoma tradition. And, of course, he's a white South African originally. You know, he's got Irish roots and so on.
Yes.
And we have done, I've done some work with him through podcasts. And we, as I say, we've had him. And, just thinking, since you're here now and the next time he comes, we got to get you guys together because he very much embodies exactly everything that we're talking about now. So,
yes.
Yeah.
His work is very cool.
Yeah.
Totally.
I like this quote from Desmond Tutu. A person is a person through other persons. None of us comes into the world fully formed. We would not know how to think or walk or speak or behave as human beings unless we learned it from other human beings. We need other human beings in order to be human. That says a lot, actually.
He's basically encapsulated what Ubuntu means.
Yeah.
Exactly that. Yeah, that's where we need to go to. You know, this separative consciousness that's dividing everyone up into camps, that's putting borders in the way that's happening. It's not to say that there shouldn't be appropriate borders both internally and externally, but this denigration of peoples, this objectification of peoples, and once you start to do that, then we know where that leads historically. There's nothing that you can't do to people that you've dehumanized, you know. So this is what we have to really fight against, is this tendency to dehumanize the other. So, you know, this remedy or this deep medicine of seeing ourselves as part of each other and seeing these deep historical ties that we've had through so many profound human experiences, you know, the struggle for freedom and the battlefields that have, who knows, and other lives that we've also been party to, you know, or our ancestors for sure.
Yeah.
So to feel into all of that for me is part of the awakening landscape, you know, just all of that's there. It's all here now, you know, it's nothing's absent.
Going back to the our question around the absolute addiction to our story, and at the something came from the conference that a quote, "I am because we are," and questions that came up into relation to this phrase, "Who is the I, and who is the we," and I think that's a major, major starting point. I'd like you to talk a little bit about in terms of your own practice and what you have gotten from incredible teachers like Ajahn Chah, our self-inquiry into that place of recognizing the habitual patterns, what we came in with in this lifetime to work out and work through, all of those identifications, Ram Dass calls it, you know, you are not your roles, you're not that identification. Well, who are you, and how do we switch and turn our perspective in a way that even allows us to think of who is the we?
Yeah, well, that is the question. Who are we, basically? and there's so many different lenses we can look through that in responding a way the Buddhists understand, the way Crowley Baba Ram Dass talked about. I think for me, it's a question of understanding that there are different levels of our being, different frequencies almost. Different ways that we manifest and show up in this world. In each piece we have to attend to, each piece needs to be respected and integrated. And, you know, so there's the personal self. And I think when I first started spiritual practice because my first opening was through psychedelics, which was and psilocybin, which I wasn't, you know, I was just some young girl, not, you know, just reading Lord of the Rings and cooling out, chilling out, and someone just said, oh, try this, and I was like, oh. Next thing I'm transported into the sort of the great cosmos and the deep sort of meaning of it all, and you know, and here I am sort of hanging out with God, which is, you know, absolute, am God at some level, and this incredible sense of love, and all the questions I had were like becoming clarified, like, you know, I saw myself as a drop in the ocean, you know, this lifetime, this self was just, you know, just that in terms of the consciousness that I wouldn't say I really am as a me self, you know, that we really are. You know, it was just, and you know, that's, and that the karma, when we talk about different lives, what I understood from that consciousness, which we can touch into, usually through plant journeying or through these kind of altered states or deep meditations or shifts that happen, you know, it was very, very clear to me that the karma wasn't like, oh, you're bad or you've got these things. Yes, there is that aspect of we have debts to pay. I do feel that about karma. We have a curriculum to run through. We have people to meet. We have gifts to offer. But it was more like it was at a very, very profound level. It was because we can't really accept and deeply abide by what our true nature really is, this glorious, profound, liberated, unmoving, unceasing, unborn, undying consciousness. Because we can't really tolerate that truth and that reality, we sort of choose to separate out. It's like we fall into ignorance. It's the easier. So this fun, and the Buddha talks about avijja paccaya sankhara, that this fundamental not knowing, the mind not knowing its true nature, not knowing that, you know, this depth of profound stillness on the one hand, and within that, the profound intimacy of all phenomena, of all things that arise within that ground of awareness, you know, that it's, that's, that on some level we're all of that, both the movement and the stillness, the phenomena and the unborn. But that's, we don't often see ourselves through that lens. So that paccaya sankhara, it's like that shutting down that what the Buddha calls ignorance, or which means not seeing. It's like the shutting down, the closing down. We separate out and we become identified with a sankhara, with a patterning, with the particular, with the piece, with the self. And that shapes the sense of self, the sankharic material that we have both inherited personally, socially, familiarly, culturally, ancestrally, genetically, karmically. That is the stuff of our work. You know, those are the shapes of the self. Those are relational fields. That's usually the mode we're in. We're usually locked in to the dynamic of the patterning and the self and the sankharic, which is a lot about constriction. I've been very interested in, at this point of our evolutionary process, we need to have the fullness of our energy to engage, our full consciousness, that primal essence of consciousness that's free. But historically and personally, we're so not free. We're so bound by these old ancient fears and guilts and shame and oppressions, all of us, internally, externally. So, you know, I'm interested in what is it to free ourselves from those? We have to free ourselves from those so we can have, and at speed, you know, we don't have a lot of time to sit now 30 years on a Zafu to do that. We have to do what, you know, we have to move through these collectively, and we need each other's help. So to see each other and see ourselves and free each other, you know, free, forgive everything. You know, that's what for me is like, forgive it. You know, I get really pissed off about stuff, and in human relation, it's like every day, are you going to hold on to this, or are you just going to forgive it and let go and move? So these are the kind of negotiations that happen for me between the self and its hang-ups and its sort of resentments and its places it gets stuck and its needs and its fears, and this consciousness that's saying, you know, let it go, open up, use these practices, keep You know, and every day for me, it's a struggle to do that. It's not like I'm just sort of like it's one moment and I'm sort of flying in that super mundane space where I can, you know, as it says in the Heart Sutra, course the depths of reality and see all beings as part of my intimate, you know, one kind of presence, you know, as Kuan Yin and Avalokiteshvara, you know, the great compassion of knowing all beings as part of themselves. That's, you know, consciousness very rare for me to stumble into. But, you know, mostly I'm negotiating with the part that's sort of constricted, closed in the patterns. And so that's where a daily practice and the contemplative practice, the mindfulness practice, the investigation, the insight, the devotions, you know, as Ananda Maya said, either dissolve the separation with devotion or burn it away through insight or wisdom, something like that, you know. So both of, but, you know, do both. And as you do both.
Yeah, you know, yeah. You know.
That's, yeah.
No, it just occurring to me, one of the other things, these patterns are so embedded in us. Yes, you can hear a few dogs here. The old dogs are barking.
Nice.
Off. That's part of my podcast, the Mind Rolling Podcast.
Sweet. I love it. I love dogs.
Sometimes I'm astonished by how comfortable I can be with these patterns. How comfortable, how lazy. Like I, you know, understand myself fairly well. I've done work over these many years and have that rudder of Neem Karoli Baba. And it's astonishing how embedded these patterns are, that there's a comfort zone in them. And there's a way I can see myself at times indulging in them. And like reading what you wrote, that blog, and resounding with that dismemberment and boy, you know, just the heat of it. And I see myself going into the heat of it and seeing also the comfort of that. There's a kind of comfort. And to me, that comfort is associated with laziness of not switching that moment, of not wanting to switch that moment because of the comfort zone. Is that something that makes sense?
Yeah, no, totally clear. And I exactly have the same. We all do, I think, you know. Mm. I think we're up against deep patterns. I mean, these sankharas, you know, they're deep, some of them. That, you know, the fundamental one to ignorance is the most profound. You know, it's not going to, you know, and it operates at different levels. It's basically that place that shuts down and goes into denial or stays comfortable. And, you know, it's a very survival thing. It's a very ancient thing. It's what keeps the world turning, you know, and Buddha says there's no beginning to that. So, and we experience it every day, you know, in manifesting. So, you know, to have the clarity to keep seeing that and to keep working with that and to keep, you know, both challenging ourselves, but also being kind to the self, because the self, you know, is limited. It's not going to be able to do it all. It's not, as you know, and I think this is the place of devotion for me. Mm. It's the place where, you know, I remember on one journey I took, you know, when I was very young, before I, sort of got much into deeper meditative practice, that I had on psilocybin as well. As this, you know, I believe are these plants are the original indigenous medium for us to access these expanded states, so we can see the vision and understand the whole dynamic and get clarity. And I'm glad that there's some movement towards beginning to allow society to have access, because of the neurosis and control of consciousness has been a very politicized thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, to let people have their own consciousness. But, you know, I remember sort of making this whole list of like, oh, if I can use, and it was probably not the greatest way, if I can use this journey to really understand all my problems from that a subtle level of consciousness, that expanded level of consciousness, I'll have all the answers. So I wrote all these questions. I was completely confused and lost at that time. I mean, really, I was very young and just like, you know, And I did, I mean, I had an incredible journey. I mean, I actually saw a name Kauri Baba on that journey. I mean, he was actually there. He was actually appeared. And he was like, and he was basically saying, he wasn't really speaking, but what I saw was he was a vehicle. He was saying, it's not about me. He was like an empty shell. It was like this force of Ram, of this energy, this incredible love, this incredible non-dual consciousness. You know, I haven't got words for it. It was like all I could do is like offer myself in devotion. So, you know, I forgot all about these questions, but when I sort of started to kind of find my body, even find myself, and I read those questions, you know, of the self, like, you know, what can I do? What should I do? How can I just wept because I saw how lost the self is, how it's sort of mostly a little clueless, you know, it's really sort of caught in these patterns. And all I could do is really, it didn't matter. It was like, it doesn't matter what you do, just do it with love. It, you know, the important thing is that you just keep trying to come from love. And so you, and do it from a place of service. Don't try and get stuff, you know, just to accumulate for yourself. So that's obviously a life lesson. But for me, when I hit that place, when I feel the encroaching of that ignorance and that shutdown, I think there's a great power in calling, and if you're calling on Kuan Yin, calling on Hanuman, calling on whatever speaks to you, you know, the greater power of reality, the deep intelligence that is, you know, is playing the game. You know, we're not the only game players here. We're not the only ones holding the cards. We think we are, but there's a whole other level of intelligence and depth and power here, you know, that we think we, you know, our ego thinks it's in control. It's not, you know, and one of those powers is Mother Nature, and she's playing her cards, you know, she's got the final vote. We forget that. So, you know, to call on that, and it's a living universe. It's not dead. You know, this is the Ubuntu, you know, Mandaza, and this is the African indigenous message. You know, it's a responsive living universe. You know, you cry out, you know, like, I can't do this on my own. I can't wake up on my own. I can't overcome myself. I can do all the mindfulness practice. I can sit on it. But this sort of, and there's a response, you know, in one of the Kuan Yin ceremonies of Avalokiteshvara, the deep bodhisattva of compassion, it says the response and the way are intertwined inconceivably. The way, you know, you practice the way, and we're practicing with all of this, there's a response. And we shouldn't underestimate that. That's where I think we have to hold our faith. You know, as Nisargadatta said, reality comes in the form of the unexpected. You know, it was like Greta Thunberg, this 15-year-old girl that came in onto COP24 platform in the UN and came out with this message. I saw now she's got millions of views. And it was like out of left field. You know, from the unexpected, she was the voice for the planet. You know, this, she has Asperger's, she's just walks in this in English, you know, she's not even speaking her home language, Swedish. This brilliant girl comes with this completely clear message, or for my home country, as I mentioned, the blog, the Arising of Extinction Rebellion.
Yeah.
Which has just taken the world by storm. And it's very decentralized and very like, it's about consciousness. It's about feel the urgency and move, you know, move nonviolently, move with love, but move, you know, respond, be, you know, and you'll be guided, you know, somehow something will come, and you just have to follow that sense of the guidance and allow it to carry you. And that's a great act of faith and trust. And I'm not always up for it. But, you know, I hope to try and be as up for it as I can.
Mm.
With all
do.
The, you know, crazy stuff that my mind dishes up every day.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I think you there's an essential comment here that you've given. And it's one, it's my guiding light. Mindfulness, awareness of the way in which we relate as a quote-unquote self, got to work on that. You got to forgive yourself. You got to have the love that goes out to everyone around us has to also go to yourself. And at the same time, so you do this work the best that you can, And I love what you said. You ask for a response to whoever it may be, or whatever it may be, from Buddha to Neem Karoli Baba to Christ, Hanuman, whatever it may be. You ask for a response, and a response will come. Because essentially we have that deep faith and trust inside of us. However, maybe it's, you know, it's deep, 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 deep down there, but it is there. And it's that combination. One of the Krishnadas at one of these retreats, we were talking about grace. And he gave, you know, that famous image, when it's out raining and rain is grace. And unless you cup your hands together, you are not collecting, you are just getting wet. And the cupping the hands together is practice. For him, it's chanting. For others, it's meditation. For others, it's prayer, whatever it may be. And I see that combination is essentially the most powerful movement that we can make in regards to this fantastic addiction we have with our story.
Yes, addiction is the right word. The complete, so compelling, and the little self is at the center of it all. This big drama, long suffering, long heroic, long struggling. You know, you've got to hand it to the self. It's quite a poignant and powerful, hero. You know, trying to struggle with it all.
Yeah.
A conduit for so much.
Poor little guy. Poor little mini guy. Me.
So, doing its work. It can.
Yeah. Is this man Mandaza Gandemwa? Is that the, I think
Gandemwa,
you mentioned?
Yeah.
Well, I love what he said. He pointed us back to our own mind, because we have so much going on of blame. That's another part.
Yes.
It's easy to get there. And he says, he points back to our own minds to find the source of war, conflict, corruption, rather than accusing political and business leaders out there. In order to heal, our minds need to become like the ocean that refuses no river.
Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't
that? That's beautiful.
Such a great deep thing. African wisdom. And this is a man who's lived through, you know, he's in his 70s, so he's lived through colonial Zimbabwe. Mm. And he's lived through the Mugabe years, which were also brutal, and the destruction of Zimbabwe. And he's come out intact, you know, so it's not like he's just saying these things from an ivory tower. He's saying it from being, from a place of a country that's had this enormous struggle for a long, long time. So, and he, you know, this great spirit of Ubuntu, this, you know, relationship. I think that's the thing that we need to reclaim the sacred and the sense of relationship with the sacred within all things and all beings, you know, the bus driver, the person stuck behind the counter at some mall or other, you know, that with the land, with everything, with the breath, with the birds, with, you know, that we do feel that this is not a dead matter, but a living universe that we're in relationship with, you know. And I think once we start to feel into that, then life is mysterious, you know. It's a really, we start to move into a whole different kind of journey and way of being.
Somehow I love this Ubuntu and the definition of and all and Boto and Ubuntu. So we're gonna make sure that we have these wonderful descriptions and definitions up in the show notes here, and maybe, and I'd love to even connect somehow with this particular person, Mandaza Kandemwa. And then the coup d'etat of this conference is somebody I love so much, Thupten Jinpa.
Yeah, Thupten Jinpa is so wonderful, yes.
Yeah, he's his
so
holiness.
Clear.
Yeah,
so steady, so real.
Yeah.
Yes,
and he's the His Holiness the Dalai Lama's main translator, certainly here in the West. And I have seen him so many times, and we've done podcasts together. And listen to what he said. And this is also so very penetrating. To the naive eye of someone who grew up in a poorer part of the world, meaning him, I mean, he came through over the mountain and over the Himalayas into India, and then, I mean, he was in one of those road building camps actually for a while. And then he was in South India, and that's where His Holiness met him, and he got picked him out of there. To the naive eye of someone who grew up in a poorer part of the world, at first glance, people in the West seem more confident, more efficient, and better able to take care of themselves and enjoy life. But he goes on to point out that all is not as it seems. Wild, yes, understatement.
Yeah. Yeah.
People neglect, quote unquote, their basic needs for sleep, nutrition, and exercise, and drive themselves harder and harder at work because they don't know how to find validation as human beings. Talk about that whole thing of Ram Dass and the addiction to our roles. And without them, we have no validation as human beings. People lash out or shut down when they are criticized because they are all too ready to believe anything bad about themselves. How ready we are to believe that stuff all the time. But at the same time, they can't stand to hear anything bad about themselves because they lack a sense of self-worth to balance it. People feel anxious and depressed and desperate, and they don't know what to do, and they blame and berate themselves for this too. Boy, does that encapsulate us here, though, coming from somebody from a completely different culture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does. It's really, he goes to our wound, you know, our profound wound, that the self has been, you know, ripped out from that sense of belonging a long, long time ago. I mean, we've been colonized as well, actually. You know, everything's been colonized, you know, the body, the mind, and sold off. So to reclaim and not to, I mean, there is a lot of, I mean, I think also as Westerners, we can also feel very down on ourselves because of our very destructive history of colonial history. Yeah. But there's also tremendous gifts and spirit and generosity. Like, I know in America now, so many Americans feel bad about the country and themselves because of what's been going on for so long. But I also try and remind my American friends of the enormous spirit and generosity that I experience here, the spirit of exploration and inquiry and you know, the work that we're doing now. So much of the consciousness work has come out of America and rolling around the globe. So there's also a positive side, but it really, this piece that Thupten Jinpa is talking to is really needs to be attended to, you know, therapeutically and you know, and meditatively, to profoundly reconfigure our relationship to the self, to heal what we can and to get it in perspective so that it doesn't completely flood and overwhelm our ability to reconnect with our spiritual core.
Yeah.
Which is what we've lost, our soul. We lost our soul. You know, we're a soulless culture, basically. So this reclamation of soul and the sacred, without necessarily piling on the agony of how desperate we are. We sort of know that, but I do think there's hope. I'm going to say there's hope for us. One thing that Americans are so good at so much, I think, the organizing, the bringing together of this spirit, of this tremendous spirit for freedom, if channeled in the positive way, I think is really necessary and important for our times.
Yeah.
We need that American spirit to really rise and to be the best it can as you know, that light on the hill, so to speak.
Yeah.
But, you know, evolved and matured, not ideologically and not ideological and warlike, you know. So.
And I think, coming to a close here in terms of our time together, the one other thing that Jinpa, there was a suggestion, and here's the core of it all for me. The question is, can we find common ground where we can agree about common values, you know, with this gigantic polarization in this country right now. And he suggested the question, and I think this is such a great thing for us to offer to those that we absolutely have no, feel we have no common ground. What do we want for our children? As a way of revealing the universal values. How do we expand our tolerance and appreciation of differences among us so that our differences don't trigger threat responses? Can we redefine self-interest to include interdependence and communal values? And that's a starting point, because for everyone, what do we want for our children? So I really love that. I think that's a great way to, you know, to end this particular discussion. Thank you so much,
Danisara. Thank you, Raghu.
It's so great. We're going to have, I'm not sure where you're at with your latest books, but I believe we did do a podcast around your latest books, which was maybe a year and a half ago or so. I'm not sure.
Yes. I've been so busy relocating from South Africa. Yeah. And then also Tennessee, where Kilisara's family, you know, went after his father died and closing down the house and relocating. But yes, the latest one was Time to Stand Up, which was a rallying cry, really, and a challenge to the patriarchy of Buddhism, but for Dharma practitioners to sort of, you know, get more engaged.
Yeah.
With what's going on.
And we'll have everybody, we'll have links to that and links to be able to connect with Danisara and Kitasaro. And you'll just go to BeHereNowNetwork.com/mindrolling and you'll see the show notes and you'll see the link to our YouTube video that we've just created here. And again, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I feel greatly honored and I appreciate it.
Well, you really represent, we have these other friends that are your friends too, like Jack Kornfield. Mm-hmm. And the combo of heart devotion and Buddhist concepts and mindfulness is unparalleled as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. So really love it. So thank you again.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Go well. Stay well.
Namaste.
Namaste.